Today on Jay Sekulow Live, remaking the judiciary as the U.S. Senate confirms the 200th Trump nominee to the courts.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Elections have consequences. We say that time and time again, but when you think about the amount of judicial nominees that President Trump has made, but not just nominations, that the Senate has confirmed, that Mitch McConnell has been able to move through the U.S. Senate on some of the tightest of margins. Remember, there's 53 Republican senators. Not all of them are the most conservative in the world, let's be honest. And then you've got the Democrats. And so when you put these margins up, I mean, you're talking about confirmation votes that are 52 to 48. That was the confirmation vote for the 200th federal judge nominated by President Trump that was confirmed by the U.S. Senate. I want to go right to Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. Than, we were talking before we went on the air. A third of the Court of Appeals judges in the United States are not just now Republican nominees, but were literally nominated by President Trump and confirmed by this U.S. Senate.
These are really remarkable numbers, Jordan. There are several layers that you can go through, but the 200 federal judges, Article III judges, confirmed by the Senate, nominated by President Trump, is a remarkable number. I think that 53 circuit court judges is maybe more remarkable. 30%, almost one in three of every judge sitting on the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. As we say so many times, Jordan, that's the layer, that's the level where most of these cases are decided. Very few cases go all the way to the Supreme Court. Now, one in three judges, or nearly one in three, was nominated by Donald Trump. And we can maybe get to this next layer later in the broadcast, Jordan, but there are also a number of circuit courts that have flipped control, and you can count them, 10 judges nominated by President Trump now sit on the infamous Ninth Circuit. Jordan, there's only 29 judges sitting on the Ninth Circuit. 10 of them were nominated by this president.
Yeah, I mean, that is not taking into account who was nominated by President Bush. And so you've got the gap period in between President Bush, then President Obama for two terms. And then you go back, and then you've got this. I mean, so this is a big deal. We're going to be talking about it, too. Matt Schlapp's going to be joining us in the next segment of the broadcast as well. He's again representing the Trump campaign on the air today, and he's going to be talking about this. This is, again, it's one of those topics, as we're all faced with all these other issues all day, whether it's riots taking down monuments or COVID-19 news, depending on where we live in the country. These other big points, like confirming 200, as Than said, Article III judges. These are federal judges that are nominated by the president that must be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. And you're including in there the two Supreme Court nominees that get the most attention, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. But then you go down the next level, and you don't hear a lot about all the Court of Appeals nominees. Sometimes there are a few that rise to that level. But even number 200, I think because of everything going on in our country that kind of subsumes the news, it doesn't get through as much as it should. And we don't all understand, as Than was walking through, the ramifications of these numbers. So it's not just that there's 200 and you kind of just scatter. It's literally the fact that there's not another Court of Appeals vacancy to fill right now. There's zero vacancies. So elections will have consequences because you are on the precipice of turning these courts, changing these courts for generations. So you will have more vacancies if you're reelected as you approach reelection. And whether that's at the Supreme Court, where I think there will be vacancies again, and President Trump's already done two. I mean, there could be, two more easily in the next 4 years. And the Court of Appeals, where as Than pointed out, 99.9% of cases, that's as high as they possibly go. As high is the Court of Appeals. And these courts are changing, and they're changing generationally, where you could look 20 years down the road and realize the significance of what is happening today. Your vote matters, the election matters, and understanding all of the issues as you cast that are important. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live. Also encourage you, go to ACLJ.org and check out our school choice initiative that we launched this week.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. This is something. We've had a couple of these issues come back. You know, yesterday we went through because we did the Flynn opinion the day before that, and then we thought, okay, so on Thursday we said we were going to go through the Strzok notes, so spend more time on that because we spent time on it in relation to Flynn and kind of going through that entire opinion, which was a huge deal. And then you have, and that was a court of appeals decision from the DC court of appeals. And then you move on, you've got, you know, the Strzok notes, big deal. You got to put those together. We try to do that for you. And then you look at this nominations issue, and it came about, you know, we mentioned it and it kind of moved on. And I think the scope is a big deal. You're talking about 200 federal court nominees that have been nominated by President Trump and confirmed by the U.S. Senate. They're on the bench. They're there. And while we spend a lot of time, and when I say we spend a lot of time, I mean the American public who does tune in to follow this really follows it only when it reaches the level of the U.S. Supreme Court in those big hearings where you have a lot of politicization and a lot of polarization too in the country, and they get pretty nasty as we saw. Now, with Gorsuch, it wasn't so nasty, but still very tight margins. And then with Kavanaugh, again, very nasty, which we've seen before in our history. It's kind of unfortunately part of that process that you come to expect. But in reality, there's a lot of, and listen, the Democrats know this. The left knows this. The people on the other side of this with different judicial philosophy know this as well, that if you can get through in your first term to where you have no vacancies on the Court of Appeals, that is an unbelievable achievement. I mean, I don't use unbelievable lightly. It is actually unbelievable, that achievement, to be able to get that through at a time. Think about the time that's happening. I mean, I would go to Than Bennett, Washington, D.C., because Than, that's something I realize too, is that the time period that these confirmations are taking place, it is one of the more dysfunctional times in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. But because this goes to the U.S. Senate directly under our Constitution, does not have to go through the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi. The elections have consequences. Republicans are still in charge of the U.S. Senate, and they've been able to take these nominees through that process.
Well, first of all, Jordan, it's been 40 years since there hasn't been a vacancy on the Circuit Court of Appeals level. So even if you only look at it from a historical lens, it really is almost unprecedented that there would be no vacancies. And look, there wasn't like there was just a small number of vacancies to start. There have been 53 vacancies filled. And Jordan, let me just put a little context on what you said about the times in Washington, D.C. There have been what is known as cloture votes, which is basically the end to a filibuster ever since President Truman. There was an opportunity to invoke cloture votes. Jordan, if you add up all of the cloture votes that have been required on federal judges from President Truman up until President Trump, you have to multiply that by five times to get to the number that Democrats have required for President Trump nominees. So the number in and itself is amazing, Jordan, but you have had to take an overwhelming number of cloture votes, burn up Senate floor time. That is the level of commitment that Leader McConnell and Chairman Graham and Chairman Grassley have had to this measure. Kudos to President Trump for keeping the nominees coming. Kudos to the Senate for keeping them churning. On both of those levels, though, Jordan, it really is a remarkable number.
All right, 1-800-684-3110 if you want to weigh in on that. If you got questions, comments, and how important is it to you as you're deciding, how involved to be in this election, which is going to be a different kind of involvement too, but depending on where you live in the country, what kind of reopening phase you're at, if I will. 1-800-684-3110, how important are these judicial nominations to you? We'll take your calls, your comments on that. We are joined by a very special guest right now, a good friend of mine, Matt Schlapp. He's the chairman of the American Conservative Union, but he's also the co-chair of Catholics for Trump. He's joining us today as a representative of the Trump campaign. Matt, it's great to have you on the show.
Jordan, what a great honor to be with you.
Let me ask you first, Matt. This idea of the 200th nominee confirmed by the U.S. Senate, 200th federal judge nominated by the president under Article 3 of the Constitution. This is a huge deal.
This is a big deal. This is a historic thing. You know, as judges determine more and more of our future, as liberal judges view their job is to be the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee or the Appropriations Committee, as they act more and more like legislators, pushing all this radical social agenda, the fact that Donald Trump is countering that and Mitch McConnell is countering that with people who simply believe in the Constitution, they're young men and women who are going to be on the bench for a long time, and this is where the fight is. It's on the federal bench, and Donald Trump is ready for that fight.
This is one of those issues, Matt, that I think people have got to kind of take it. Maybe it might take a couple times here right now because of all the other news we get inundated with. And they have to realize this as they are starting the campaign process throughout the summer, and you get into midsummer, then Labor Day, and it really, really kicks off where, they talk to their neighbors, not just about COVID news. Let's be honest. And this news to me is very important as people actually decide who they're going to vote for.
Yeah, I think this is important. Now, let's look at the Supreme Court, where Republicans tend to only get justices that are 50% reliable. And, I haven't loved everything Neil Gorsuch has done. But on the wide set of issues, the Trump justices on the Supreme Court are part of a new approach, joining with Justice Scalia and Alito. Yeah. They used to call him Scalito, remember?
Yes.
Justice Alito and Justice Thomas, to really stand up for the Constitution. Here's what's interesting, Jordan, you know this. Basically, conservatives come into government and they know that they're bound by the law and the Constitution and the fact that most things should be decided by individuals in their homes, and government questions should mostly be decided in state capitals and not in Congress. What the socialists believe in is no local cops, federal cops, no local anything, national everything. And we can see with health care and everything else, that is a recipe for disaster in America and a lot of misery.
Let me go to Than Bennett, too, in Washington, D.C. Than, you have a question for Matt?
Yeah, sure, Matt. Good to have you with us. I just think it's interesting on this issue that this is one issue that both campaigns will really start with the same response. They'll start by telling you that the federal judiciary is the place where an elected president can have the greatest legacy. So I think if we had someone on from the competing side, they would say the exact same thing you just did. This is one of the most important issues on the ballot. But of course, the difference is what exactly that legacy will be. So can you speak just a minute to the difference in the legacy that would exist if you had a President Trump nominating judges or if you had a President Biden nominating judges?
Yeah, well, the first thing is, think about this for a minute. The Democrats are batting 1,000. 100% of their nominees to the court never waver on any big question. They are like pieces of kindling being wrapped in twine. They stick together every time. Why do they get 100% of theirs? I think it's because they are picking people that have a very radical view of what society should embrace, and they will use any power to get there. Joe Biden, who came to the United States Senate and in his first year in the Senate voted to rescind Roe v. Wade, has come so far, has moved so far to the left and become so radical. Expect the most unconstitutionally oriented justices to the Supreme Court that we've ever seen in the history of our country if he wins.
Well, I'd say this. I think Matt, and Matt just keyed in on this, but this is a way for everybody just to understand, is that the left and the liberal judges, they're coming in, and whether they're justices of the court or court of appeals, the nominees, it is extremely partisan how they vote. They will come up with a reasoning of how to get to where they want to go. And whereas conservative nominees have a philosophy that they start with, and you can take philosophies and get to a different point. You can. I mean, you can actually, now on some issues, these kind of issues that we see in the news, a lot of the cases, even at the Supreme Court, don't make huge news. But they all are impactful. Because as we said, if only 99.9 are getting done at the Court of Appeals level, think about that Supreme Court. And Matt, I always say elections have consequences. This is one of the issues where they have the most consequences, because whoever is elected the next president, I think we either see the Supreme Court turn right and more conservative, or it's going to go exact right back to where it was with a couple more nominees the other way.
We have won the presidency. I'm 52 years old. We have won the presidency more times than they have in my lifetime. We have never, ever had a reliable conservative majority on the court, because our batting average previous to President Trump was about 500. Theirs is 1,000. Donald Trump only cares about the outcomes. He wants to pick people that will follow the Constitution and make sure you can't legislate. He's going to bat 1,000 on doing that. Like I said, I haven't been happy with absolutely everything they've done, but on the big questions, they've been sticking together. And these judges that he's selecting are rock solid. And I will say one thing: he's going to get two or three picks if he wins again, and I think he's going to win the president. He's going to get two or three more picks. We're going to get this majority, and I urge him, pick people who will, no matter what the Washington Times says or the New York, we love the Washington Times, so the Washington Post or the New York Times says that they will do the right thing. It's about the Constitution. We said it was America versus socialism at CPAC this year. I'm sorry that we were so accurate. That is exactly what's happening in our country.
No, it's amazing. I mean, that issue, too, the idea that we're debating socialism and these policies in our country. Matt Schlapp, Chairman of the ACU, co-chair of Catholics for Trump, joining us today on behalf of the Trump campaign. Matt, always great to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jordan.
Folks, we're going to take your phone calls now, 1-800-684-3110, the ramifications of these judicial appointments and what will happen these next few years. You know, as again, there's going to be vacancies on the U.S. Supreme Court. Which way will the court tilt? 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. You know, we have launched a brand new initiative at the American Center for Law and Justice, the School Choice Initiative. We were just talking to Matt Schlapp about judicial nominees and the importance of these federal court nominees. And remember, this is an issue, school choice, that often gets litigated. Often. Whether it's because money is going to a religious school, that's where parents have chosen to send their child, or just the idea of public school, private school, can the dollars be used, how can they be utilized, are often litigated. Almost always litigated. So if you're going to expand school choice, why do you think it's the American Center for Law and Justice involved, a legal organization? Because you have to be ready for the legal battle that comes with it. So do you think it's important who's there with what judicial philosophy? Because as I said, as Matt Schlapp was talking about, those on the left, they know where they want to go. Their conclusion, you can already decide where they're going to be before you even have any argument, before you filed any briefing. If an issue got to them, you could literally say they will be here and they will just come up with a reason to get there. Whereas conservatives start with a philosophy. What does that philosophy include? And sometimes it includes things for some of them that they don't even agree with, but that they would say, it's not about what I agree with, right? It's that what is the correct interpretation of the constitutional authorities here, the powers that are here, what's being challenged here. So this school choice issue is one that if we're going to expand it, that means the legal challenge will expand. But I want you to check out this brand new video. We're debuting it here on Jay Sekulow Live. And if you're listening, you're going to hear the video. You can check it out later at aclj.org and through our social media as well, so you can share it with your friends and family. If you're watching right now on Facebook and Periscope, click that share button. I want so as many people see this video as possible that we're about to premiere on the ACLJ's brand new school choice initiative. Check it out. We are very excited to announce a new ACLJ initiative, a new ACLJ program. It's one we've worked on for years, decades at the ACLJ, which is school choice cases at the Supreme Court.
I'm very interested in creating a foundation of education for those folks in the middle income arena, as well as kids living in poverty, kids like myself who perhaps live in the wrong zip code, going to underperforming schools.
When you have a situation where the poorest among us cannot afford or do not have the opportunity to get the education as those who's living in zip codes that are more affluent, that has got to change.
It is time for affirmative action for public school children.
It is a civil rights issue, but particularly in the Black community, and every child has the right to a solid and good education.
We wanted to look at what the ACLJ could do as an initiative to really assist what we believe is most important.
And by giving parents, especially underprivileged parents, the opportunity to give their child the best education possible, that is a goal that every American should strive for.
When parents have choice in education, I think their kids have a better chance of success.
The ACLJ, we've launched our School Choice Initiative to ensure that every state in the country allows parents to choose the school they believe will provide their kids the best education, whether it's private, religious, charter, homeschool, or public school, regardless of their economic standing.
Had it not been for education, I would not be sitting here today. I think of education as the gateway to the American dream.
We're going to work at the federal level, the state level. Opportunity shouldn't be dictated by what zip code you live in. Sign the petition now to demand school choice, justice, and equality of opportunity for every American child.
If not now, when? If not us, who?
Truth is, how do you respond to these moments like George Floyd's situation, which then cause a bigger national conversation, not just on police reform, which unfortunately totally crashed and burned in the U.S. Senate, and that was not because of Republicans, but because Democrats did not want to have the debate. They didn't want to have a debate on those issues. But then you look at the broader, bigger picture. It's how do you take the civil rights issue and move from, you know, where you've, as a country, you've been dealing with this since your founding, and then the Civil War, and then you had the Civil Rights Movement. I mean, literally, you go 100 years, 100 years, 100 years, and then you move forward again, and you've got post-Civil Rights Movement. Then it's kind of like, how do you get to that next step where you're almost like not even living in that moment anymore? It's still historic. I'm not saying you shouldn't remember it. You shouldn't learn about it. And obviously, we all should learn about leaders like Martin Luther King. You should learn about Malcolm X. You should learn about who those individuals were that were leading the sit-ins at a Woolworth's counter. You know, I mean, it's important to know, regardless of where you grew up in the country. It's important to know about the Civil War. It's important to know your history, the history of America. That being said, how do you get there with education? It is not going to happen when you allow failing schools to continue to fail a lot of people, millions of people, because of what zip code they happen to be born in. You know, it's not that kid's decision of where to be born. And those parents, again, are facing tough issues. I want you to take a listen. Senator Tim Scott, Republican from South Carolina, Byte 7.
The challenge came down to a simple thing. Me. The Republican Party is not the party they wanted leading this debate. They believe that they have a chance of winning back the White House, and therefore, they will spend their time doing nothing until they win.
Including, Than, stepping on a moment when America came together. I mean, where literally everybody was agreeing that things need to be done. There need to be changes with the police, and there needs to be changes even at the federal level on how local police departments are going to have to operate. That is not something you'd usually get Republicans and Democrats to agree on, and yet they did, and Democrats, as Senator Scott said, were not even willing to go there and open the door to a debate because they feared there might actually be legislation.
This is really a pretty stark moment this week in Washington, D.C., Jordan, because both chambers, the House and the Senate, brought up bills to address equal justice. And by the way, just quickly, I'll say it's not enough to just be for equal justice. You're absolutely correct. You also have to be for equal opportunity, which is why the school choice issue dovetails here. But look, if you look at the differences in the way these two chambers carried these bills, the House passed a bill without allowing a Republican amendment because there are different approaches to this. When it went down to the Senate floor, the bill brought forward by Senator Scott, which, by the way, Jordan, was made up primarily of things that every Democrat in the United States Senate would say they were for, but yet were not willing to vote for. But even that as it may, Senator Scott went down and they said, we want five amendments to change these five things. He said, done, but we'll have those amendments. And guess what? I support several of those amendments. We'll have those votes. We'll see where they lie. Leader Schumer walked away from that deal, Jordan. So he said, actually, we need about 20 amendments. Senator Scott said, done. Let's put 20 amendments on the floor of the Senate. And Senator Schumer said, well, Leader McConnell won't let us. Leader McConnell went to the floor and said, you can have them. You can have the 20 amendment votes you wanted. Jordan, this was never about having that debate. It makes me very sad to say this, but there is no other explanation other than the one you just got from Senator Scott. Democrats in the United States Senate did not want to pass a bill under President Trump that was brought forward by a Republican. Jordan, we've got to get around that if we're going to make progress on this issue. And look, Senate Democrats just aren't there yet.
I mean, I just got a New York Post breaking news notification on my phone as we go into this first break. And if you want to talk to us there, 1-800-684-3110, talking about judicial nominees, talking about the issue of school choice. But I got this breaking news. Minneapolis City Council votes to abolish police force. Well, that is not going to be a solution. That's not a nationwide solution. That's not a community-wide solution. That's not a citywide. That's not a statewide solution. We have to have these reforms made. It's not, no one's saying that there shouldn't be changes in reform. But we cannot just say we're going to have the police department. You know, we're going to have city council resolutions going through. And does that even happen in that state? I don't know enough of the laws in Minnesota to know if that's just a protest vote or if that actually can do something like actually disband a police department. 1-800-684-3110. Check out ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Check out our brand new School Choice Initiative and share that new video.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
So again, folks, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Thanks for joining us for our second half hour. We've got a special guest, too, coming up in the final segment of this broadcast. And it's going to be great as well. Michael Sweet will be joining us. A new Striper song we're debuting here on Jay Sekulow Live. So you want to check that out. So bringing you something unique today on the broadcast, and I think it's a time period when everybody likes something a little unique, a little different, honestly. 1-800-684-3110. So we're talking about the judicial nominees, and we had these questions too, Than, on Facebook. Heather's got this question: are there other judicial vacancies to fill? Now listen, those vacancies are going to come about. There'll be vacancies on the Court of Appeals in the months to come. Some will be because of age, some will be because of retirements. Now, you don't see a lot happen right before elections, and that's because the incoming president will get to decide who fills that spot. At the Court of Appeals level, that does come into play with these nominees, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, Jordan. I mean, we've talked a lot about the Supreme Court and the Circuit Court of Appeals, but there have already been 143 judges confirmed for the level beneath that, which is the district court level. And there are still some pending vacancies for that level. In fact, the president has already nominated 43 district judges that have not yet been confirmed by the United States Senate. There are 32 of them that are still awaiting consideration from the Judiciary Committee. There are 11 that are awaiting a vote on the Senate floor. And Jordan, this really goes to the point that you made earlier in the broadcast, that the times in Washington, D.C. that we live on make this number of 200 confirmations even more remarkable, because I can tell you right now, of those 43 judges that are pending, probably all of them has the support of the United States Senate, and yet Senate Democrats are going to make most of them clear two votes. They're going to make them clear a cloture vote and a final passage vote, because the whole goal is to run as much Senate floor time as possible to keep them from being confirmed. So look, the short answer is that there are still vacancies. The White House is continuing to nominate. The Judiciary Committee and Leader McConnell are continuing to process. But I come back to that Circuit Court of Appeals number. Jordan, if you had told me, even just a few months ago, but certainly at the beginning of the Trump presidency, that there would be 53 Circuit Court judges confirmed and that there would not be a single Circuit Court vacancy across the United States of America, I would have told you were full of it.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's again, it's an unbelievable accomplishment. I want to take Timothy's call on Missouri on line one. Timothy, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Thanks. I just wanted to say that it seems to me that maybe President Trump's nominees to the Supreme Court have been confirmed. Maybe they have this wrong idea that there should be a split court. Like certain amounts should be liberal, certain amounts should be conservative, and there should be the one in the middle, like Justice Kennedy,
yep,
who kind of decides. Maybe that's the mentality, and maybe that's the problem.
Well, I do think, Timmy, there is this idea. We've kind of, it's been a self-fulfilling prophecy. The courts became politicized. Now, it's a political process, and our founding fathers made it a political process. They said, on these federal courts, and how the Congress first of all, Congress has the power to set up the inferior courts, and then, so the Supreme Court is the only one listed in the Constitution, and then you'll see they made this a very political decision. Why? Because at the same time, they said that the judges nominated should have lifetime appointments, so that it's not all about the politics of the day. But the politics of the day does influence it. And so I think what happened is as the courts gained power and significance, which happened as our country developed as a nation, so there was kind of a history of jurisprudence, these nominees started to reflect more of the immediate. Now, they also... I think about what happened to Justice Thomas, by the way, at the hands of Joe Biden. Let's all remember that. People need a reminder. Joe Biden was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee during those hearings. And for a lot of us who might remember, that's kind of the first time tuning in to see how partisan those nominations got. I mean, the truth is, folks, some could point to that as the beginning of a total change. and how the nominating process would work forever. Now, I would say Republicans have never been that nasty, have never tried to torpedo nominees like that. They may not vote for one because of philosophical differences, but they're not going with the personal attacks. It's a different on the left, different with their nominees as well. Different, everybody gets treated differently. So, listen, there's different judicial philosophies. I do think some of it's self-fulfilling prophecies. Others, because we're all paying a lot closer attention now.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about a brand new school choice initiative at the ACLJ, talking about the importance of these judicial nominees. I mean, what would it be like when you've got the Joe Biden, you know, say he would mandate mask? Hey, do you think that would possibly be litigated? Potentially? I mean, these are the kind of issues, you know, where you have to balance. You have to look at all of this too. The 10th Amendment. The police power goes to the states. That's how it's been interpreted by the court. Even the more liberal justices have kind of realized that states have the power really to decide. And then the states may have decided, depending on what state you live in, as you see, some of these things with the mask issue arises, and they'll say on the news, well, in Florida, they can't do this because you've got to have the governor has to do it. Now, in another state you might go to, and you might say, okay, now I'm traveling through one of the states borders Florida. So now I'm in Alabama. Well, maybe there the city council could do it, or the mayor could do it there, but then you get to Tennessee and the mayors don't have that authority again. So you go back. I mean, there's again a lot of issues that arise just from a statement like that. Just from a statement like that. Huge issues of not just is it the right policy? That's not really the question. It's is it constitutional? Is that where the authority lies? You'd have to go back and see what's been delegated to what executive power is there. Is it more of a suggestion? It could be a strong suggestion. It could be a suggestion tied to funding, potentially, different aspects. You say, you know, if we're going to do this, you've got to do this. That's different than just saying, you must do this. So, again, those are those kind of philosophical issues. I want to talk about school choice as well. Philip's calling in from California online, too. Philip, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jordan. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Phil.
I was wondering if the initiative you're putting together, does that include families that are homeschooling and then to the vendors that they go to?
So, Philip, I think, you know, in the audio of our video, and we have not gone point by point yet through each kind of school and how you could fund it. But we specifically mentioned homeschooling. And so absolutely, if those resources could be utilized then by those parents to homeschool, we absolutely support that decision. And that will also be potentially many legal battles because a lot of states make it nearly impossible to do.
Yeah, absolutely. The bottom line goal here, Jordan, is to get as many of these decisions as possible into the hands of the parents of the students rather than being controlled by the school district or even more by the federal government, Jordan, because we still have a lot of decisions being made by the federal government. And I would just say to the caller, one of the things that I'm the most interested in is seeing if we can pass something on the federal level that would loosen the restrictions on federal dollars that currently flow to the states. Right now, there's about $68 billion that comes from the federal government to support the education system. And Jordan, $23 billion of those dollars are what are called Title I dollars that are really intended to try to address this problem, help children that are in low-income areas and failing schools. Jordan, what if we took off some of the restrictions from those federal government dollars and said, if the state has come up with a way to give parents more choice, and that would include the right to homeschool, maybe it's a voucher, maybe it's a tax incentive, they can take their portion of those federal dollars and make it help address that strategy that they have chosen on a state level. Jordan, we're not trying to add more strings to this. We're trying to take federal strings off, and we're trying to take strings off on the local level as well. We think the parent of that child, if they think that homeschooling is the best option for them, we want them to have the ability to do that. But right now, in many situations, they don't have the resources because the dollars that come from Washington, D.C., Jordan, they come with a lot of requirements that we don't think should be there.
All right, let's go to George's call in Maryland on line one. George, thanks for calling us on Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Jordan and Fan. I want to thank you all for everything you do. I listen to you every day and I support your program as much as possible.
Thank you, George.
My question is, why can't they use, I think it's called a nuclear option, to push forth the bill like the police reform bill and get a vote on?
Yeah, like Senator Scott's bill. Like, this is I've seen this too come up in the Facebook chat. People say, you know, they're using this obviously for judicial nominees. Why not on these legislative some of these legislative priorities? Now, I know we could go through a lot of reasons that the House is obviously controlled by Nancy Pelosi right now. But even if you took that out of it, can they utilize that method?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is they could if they wanted to. Article 1, Section 5 gives them the ability to change the rule. This would probably have to be a change to Rule 22 that would happen. Jordan, I'll just answer the question to George this way. They don't have the votes to do it. Yeah, there are 53 Republican senators. There are not 51 votes in favor of going nuclear on legislation, and I think there are strong arguments on both sides of that issue, but it's a political question, Jordan, and there aren't 51 votes in the United States Senate to make that change at this point.
Yeah, and remember, too, that legislation they go through, it's going to have to go through the and I think one of the reasons there may not be those votes to take that change on legislation that has been changed on nominees, remember that was changed by the Democrats, and Harry Reid took it and said, well, up to the Supreme Court. So all Republicans did is said, listen, if you're going to do this for every other nominee, we're going to do it for this one, and you're not going to be able to block them if we've got a majority. And remember, Senator Scott's legislation would pass on for the legislative vote. You know, if it got through this hurdle, then it would have passed. It had the votes to pass, and it would have gone to conference then with the House, who had a very different bill, and they would have had to negotiate.
Yeah, and I think that really illustrates the fallacy of what Leader Schumer was off after. He wanted control of the Senate floor, Jordan, because, look, if he wanted to get a package into law that looked like the House bill, the way he would have done that would have been to vote for the motion to proceed, which was the vote that failed, and then get on the bill, debate the amendments, and if he didn't get the changes he liked, he could vote against the Senate bill, and if the Senate bill were passed out, it would go to that conference committee with the House bill that Speaker Pelosi drafted, and they would try to work out a compromise that could pass the Senate. Jordan, if Leader Schumer or at least enough members of the Democrat Party in the Senate were not satisfied where that compromise landed, the bill would not have become law. So when you kind of drill down on those layers, it really becomes very clear that what Leader Schumer was after was what Senator Scott said he was after. Yes, he wants to pass a police reform bill, but it's not so much about differences about what's in the two bills. He wants to pass a police reform bill when a Democrat can bring it forward and a Democrat from the White House can sign it. I just don't think there's another explanation, Jordan, because there was a mechanism to get what Leader Schumer said he wanted.
It was interesting to me, too, when I look at all these reforms, I look at all these changes, too, and then we talk big reforms. If we talk big reforms even at the state level, like our school choice initiative too. And I want to encourage people, check out at ACLJ.org. We have a lot of resources we're starting to post. More and more, we're going to have draft legislation. But this week, we're starting to just have the conversation with folks. Pieces of information you can share at a time so that people can kind of understand the full scope of this issue. But then all of these issues and these reforms even get challenged in court. I'm not saying that it's right to challenge them in court, but that's realistic, is to prepare that this whatever does pass, if this is expanded, it will be challenged. And so, yes, these court decisions and these elections, and they become federal court issues because they involve kind of constitutional issues, almost of the most high profile and of the most basic, and they become the kind of issues that people seize upon.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that we thought it was time to really engage this issue in a full court way, Jordan, is there are going to be two areas where it's going to be very close. It's going to be a very heated debate, and it's going to take a lot of political pressure to get them through. The first is through Congress. I mean, the Senate only has 53 Republicans, and Senate Democrats are pretty entrenched on this right now. Quite frankly, there are some votes on the Republican side of the conference that are going to be difficult to get on this. So there's going to need to be a public advocacy push in both the House and the Senate to get them even over the line. But then you're correct, Jordan. I mean, every single one of these efforts, including the one I just talked about, if you want to reallocate federal dollars to make sure that it actually belongs to the student as opposed to the school district, that's going to get challenged across America. And if you look at the breakdown of these courts, even as we talked about this big judicial success, Jordan, look at the three circuits that have actually switched control from controlled by judges nominated by a Democrat president to controlled by judges nominated by a Republican president. Jordan, the Second Circuit Court, currently that divide is one judge. The Third Circuit Court, that divide is two judges. The 11th Circuit Court, that divide is three judges. Jordan, that balance, it's so delicate and it's so close. If a Democrat were going to be nominating the next round, each of those three circuits would probably be lost in the first 6 months of the next presidency.
Folks, so these are huge issues. We're talking judicial confirmation. We're talking about school choice initiatives, you know, and in a broad sense that we're supporting. And then we're going to get specific as we broaden out our school choice initiative and get more specific as we go. You got to have this conversation with folks, kind of walk through, answer their questions along the way. This is something new for a lot of states. Half of the country has none of this. None of this is available. So for some of you in your state, this is a totally foreign concept that you may have heard the idea before that there should be school choice, and it kind of stops there. You know, school choice for K-12, what does that mean? What does it mean to have the choice between private, public, religious, unaffiliated at all with any kind of religious faith, or homeschooling and utilizing these funds? What's the difference between a voucher and these, a tax savings account or a tax credit? All of those different issues that have to be addressed. And I think you can look at it and say, let's take this approach and say we support all those different initiatives. I think you probably have to have vouchers to have actual real school choice. You know, that's how those are the toughest zip codes, and the most failing schools have real school choice, is by getting out in front of the problem. When we come back to Michael Sweet from Striper, it's a good way to end this Friday. It's a chaotic time in the country, let's be honest. We got Striper and Michael Sweet joining us next on Jay Sekulow Live.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow, and as we told you, we've got something special for you this segment of the broadcast, and my brother Logan is actually here with us to talk about it.
I'm here because this is a bit more in my wheelhouse, Jordan, and I'm excited to share this on Jay Sekulow Live, also airing this on the Logan Sekulow Reprogram, and we are joined by our buddy from the Reprogram, but also lead singer of the band Striper, Christian Metal Legends, and they have a brand new record coming out, Even the Devil Believes, September 4th. And they got a single coming up we're going to play here in just a little bit called Blood from Above. But welcome, Michael. We're excited to have you back.
Hey, guys. What's going on? How are you?
Hey, it's great. It's great to have you, Michael. Let me ask you first, because you produced the new album, Even the Devil Believes, while we've been in this quarantine, while we've been in this pandemic. Tell people about that process.
Well, yeah, it just worked out that way. We started the process. The guys came out to my house, to our house in January. And, you know, while they were out here, that's when we started hearing a lot more about, you know, the virus and it's spreading and whatnot. We were keeping tabs on it. And, it just worked out timing-wise for us to be able to continue on with the album and get it done during this time. If it had happened a month later, maybe not. But, you know, I think it was all in God's timing and we were able to do it and not sacrifice quality or, you know, making it a great album.
Yeah, absolutely. And Michael, I've heard the first single, maybe before these, you know, the fine people on the radio get to, I get to preview it. And it's really great. It is not just like classic Striper, which I love, but also there's some really cool kind of newer metal influences, I feel. Not new metal influences, but newer, you know, styles of metal in it. I really love it. And what I do love about this is that it is still unabashedly, unashamed, lyrically, you know, it's a Christian rock song.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's got a very bold, powerful message, and I think that, you know, it's the message that the world needs to listen to right now, and that's what's going to get us through this and save us and keep us, you know, strong. People, for whatever reason, seem to turn their backs on God during times like this, even more so, or at least it seems. And, you know, musically speaking, it's got that classic sound, but we always try to incorporate, especially me as a producer and writer, I try to incorporate a little bit of a modern twist to it and merge the two together, but not do so much so that we lose sight of who we are and where we come from. It's important to retain the classic Striper sound.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you guys hear this, you're certainly going to hear the classic Striper sound, but I do love the way it flows. And Michael, what does this look like for you guys? I saw Striper, I've seen you guys multiple times, as recently as maybe about a year ago, as a band that relies heavily, especially bands right now relying heavily on touring. How important is it, I guess, to put out new material to keep people engaged? Because obviously tours are right now, we're just starting to see the concept of concerts starting to come back, and that's still, we're in the very, very early stages of that.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I've heard bands go on record, I think Kiss was one of them, saying that, you know, they don't think that, you know, and don't, this isn't a quote, but, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect that they don't see the importance of new music because it's not worth it. You know, not enough fans want to hear new music or buy new music. And that's partially true. But I think it's very important because it keeps you creative as an artist, and you continue to grow. And the fans, with Straper anyway, they want to hear some of our new material more so than the old material. Songs like Yahweh.
Yeah.
And hopefully this new song you're about to play, Blood From Above, will be a prime example of that, that sometimes the newer songs are better than the older songs.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should get to that song. Jordan, are you ready for
it? Yeah, let's do it. So this is Striper. You've been hearing from Michael Sweet. And this is from the new album, Even the Devil Believes. And the new song, the new single, first single off the album, you're going to hear for the first time on Jay Sekulow Live, Blood From Above. Check it out. So it's great having Michael Sweet with us, and the new album from Striper is Even the Devil Believes. You can check it out, and the song you just heard is called Blood From Above. It's Striper.com, which Logan is Striper.com, to check out the new single.
That's
and
right.
Check out the new album.
And the new album comes out not till September 4th, but that single is available now, again, like you sound, Striper.com. And I have my record here right here from To Hell With The Devil, the 80s classic Yellow and Black Attack. So I was hugging this while we were listening to the new song. It's a lot of fun. Striper, again, like I said, Striper.com, Isaiah 53.5. Thank you for having me on here. It was fun to come on and share a little metal with you here in, on Jay Sekulow
Live. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a Friday. We want you also check out ACLJ.org as well. So head to Striper.com, get Blood From Above, the new single that's out at Striper.com, and then also check out ACLJ.org. We want you to stay with, especially our new School Choice Initiative. We'll talk to you next week.
decades now. The ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.